What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Hardworking Happy Hour. I'm Sean.
And I'm Catherine. And as always, we'll be breaking down all things trades, entrepreneurship, and turning your creativity into a passion career.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Hardworking Happy Hour. We're back again for another week. And this week, we have a super, super special episode for you. We have Tim Sperry from Carbon Limit, and a little bit of background on Tim. He is the CEO and founder of Carbon Limit, a company that is basically kind of saving the world. I don't want to go, you know, too crazy with that, but basically saving the world. Basically introducing additives to concrete to capture carbon and reduce the carbon footprint of building industry in general. As you can tell, this is kind of over my head a little bit, but he is a huge part of the premiere series from Adorn. The EcoLux carbon capture technology is backed by Carbon Limit. He is Tim is the one that came up with the science stuff behind how this works, and it's such a cool feature that we're able to have in the Premier Stone by Adorn. So we're super excited to just learn some more about this whole thing. And Tim is the perfect person to kind of break this down into layman's terms and bring this message to everybody. So Tim, thank you so much for jumping on with us today. I know you're super busy. Like I said, saving the world, but thanks for carving out a little bit of time for us here.
No, really great to be here. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, you know, we've got a really great team here, and we're really, you know, it's all about the environment for us, all about for making a positive environmental impact and then helping others make money at the same time. And everyone wins. Like, we really want to make not only the contractor and the builder or the concrete company the heroes, we also want them to have a quantifiable impact and do their part to help lower the carbon footprint in the environment, because most people don't know, because concrete is so ubiquitous of, you know, our daily life and modern society, that it creates such a big carbon footprint. So what better than using one of our biggest problems for carbon to create the solution? And that's what we've done. We've taken concrete, which creates a significant amount of CO2, and made it into the solution for CO2 by being able to capture it into products like on the Adorn series.
Yeah. I like how you also said, you know, there's an opportunity for everyone involved to have a financial incentive, because there's a lot of ideas out there that are, you know, can try to conquer this issue that we have, but it's never going to be implemented if there's not also a financial element where it can be successful, because, you know, as much as everyone wants to save the world, everyone kind of, you know, still wants to make money and stuff. So I think that that's a really cool way that you guys are tackling it. And to start things off here, because we've had a couple people kind of say this to us, and you know, I don't have the scientific stuff to really back it up. And we talked about this when we met a couple months ago, and you broke it down in a really great way. We are creating so much carbon dioxide. The way that society goes with construction, with just everything that we're doing as a species is creating such a huge carbon footprint. But there's those people that'll say, yeah, but we need carbon dioxide to live. That's what plants breathe. Plants need carbon dioxide. Give us just like a little bit of a background of just like how much we're actually producing, like in excess right now. Like, it's out of balance. I think that's pretty easy to grasp, but I think it'll help out some people if you can just clarify that a little bit, like how significant of a problem we have here.
Yeah, I mean, we're adding like 50 billion tons of CO2 per year. And I don't think anyone could really fathom because it's an invisible problem, right? Like, we don't see CO2 in the air. We could see a big smokestack, like putting a bunch of smoke out, and you could see like a fire creating all of this haze and all this particulate matter in the air. Like, those things you can see. So if CO2 is that the same as that, we would see it everywhere, and it would look pretty, you know, it looked pretty end of the world. But the problem is that no one can really see it, and we're overwhelming our forests, we're overwhelming our ocean, which is one of the biggest carbon sinks, and we're overwhelming the, you know, carbon sinks that naturally reduce carbon to keep balance. I mean, this is really about balance and equilibrium. Like, the world and all of its natural carbon sinks, ocean, trees, grass, you know, anything like that, keeps things in balance. As CO2 comes out of volcanoes, it gets, you know, pulled into the ocean, it gets pulled into these things, but we're overwhelming and balancing and tipping the scales to the point where we're adding so much CO2 and it's trapping all this heat. We've been seeing things getting hotter and hotter lately, and summers are getting hotter, winters are getting shorter. That's an effect of climate change from so much CO2 in the atmosphere, GHGs in the atmosphere. So, you know, even removing a billion tons of CO2, you're looking at 2% of the unnatural man-made CO2 that we're adding to the planet. And that's a lot. You know, we've never put this much CO2 into the environment. And from the beginning of the industrial age with, you know, 200 something parts per million, now we're over 400. Like, we've almost doubled the amount of CO2 as a percentage out into the environment. And, you know, we live in a state of equilibrium. So if we throw that scale off, there's consequences to that. And, you know, all of this talk about 1.5 degrees Celsius temperature change and increase, that's seen by the scientific world as that point of no return. Once we get over this heating of 1.5 degrees Celsius, there's things that we can't, you know, fix. We can't reduce our emissions, remove our emissions, do stuff like that. Right now, you know, all of us are getting more conscious about it, which is great. And we're reducing some of the emissions. It's not enough anymore. Now we have to remove emissions. And that's what Carbon Limit is doing with our concrete, our carbon capturing concrete. It's actually giving concrete in our roads, bridges, buildings, and in your homes the ability to actually capture some of that CO2, that excess CO2 that we're putting into the environment. So, you know, we really want to do everything we can, you know, now, and it's been talked about for a long time. And now the general consensus globally is what it was 40 years ago. It's now finally taken some consensus. So it's taken a long time to get there. And, you know, we now, it's at that point where we really have to do something, and we all have to come together. And it's, you know, that's what we really like too about what we're doing and what you guys are doing, is that you're making it possible for people that, you know, feel the problem's too big to actually make an impact themselves and do something like, hey, my buying decision to buy this product that captures CO2 into this project in my backyard is actually doing something to help. And that's what we want to do, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So 50 billion tons, is that 50 billion tons a year? That's a lot. That's definitely a lot. I think, you know, you don't even need to grasp how big 50 billion tons is to know that that's probably unnatural. And, yeah, you know, it's a little bit out of equilibrium. So thank you for putting a figure on that. Appreciate that. And I love how, you know, like I said, you're having that financial aspect to it to give some runway to it, because otherwise it's hard to get this adopted unless there is a financial win for kind of everybody that's involved. And I look at it, especially with the Premier Stone by Adorn that has this technology in it, it's kind of a by the way sort of thing. So it's like, check this out. It's easy to install. It looks awesome. And by the way, it's also doing a little part to help, you know, kind of reduce our carbon footprint and capture CO2. So I think it's such a good mix of all those different things. It's not the thing that's, you know, once it's integrated into a product, it's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be the leading thing. It can be the by the way, like, hey, we've got all these amazing things, and by the way, you know, we're doing something to actually make a little incremental change, at least with the Adorn Stone. We're going to talk about some applications where it can have some huge, huge impacts, but I just love how you put that.
Yeah, and look, you're totally right. Like, to get mass adoption, you've got to have an incentive there for someone. Like, either we're replacing some cement, which is saving some money there, or it could generate a carbon credit, which can create some revenue. Like, there's a lot of ways that we can get this. So it's not only, you know, good for the environment, but it's good for the bottom line too. And like, that's, I think, the win-win-win scenario that we're looking for, getting into these projects, getting into working with companies like NCP and projects with you and, you know, what we have going on here where everyone can help participate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Sean and I talked a little bit about your story, and it seems like you are a scientist and also an entrepreneur. And you've got all this stuff going for you. What exactly spurred your interest in this, you know, wanting to make a difference and helping the climate and, you know, going into that realm of building products?
So it kind of came from it came from a personal place. I lost some family members when I was young due to someone else polluting their air and to lung cancer. And I've always, you know, I grew up in nature and, you know, in Wisconsin in the middle, in Midwest, where there's a lot of green and a lot of, you know, things around, and loved hiking. I've just always loved nature. And then I've always had an issue with, and I've always been impacted by the loss of some family members. And at the same time, I love to create things and then sell them. So, you know, scientist, entrepreneur. So it came out of our previous climate tech company. We actually created a really cool paint. And it was an air purifying paint. And it actually, you could paint your walls in your home, paint outside of your home. It would capture the most commonly experienced airborne pollutants, VOCs, the volatile kind of compounds that come off of, you know, your carpets and their new, your furniture, your personal care products, your cleaning products. It would actually help clean the air, improve the air quality. And we exited that company, but before we exited that company, we were testing this and getting it certified, and then realized that it captured a lot of CO2. And at that time, it was before a lot of things really started turning around, and there was this big interest in, you know, CO2 reduction, carbon footprint reduction, and capture. We saw an opportunity, and we saw, okay, let's take all of our knowledge from our previous climate tech company. Let's put it into something where we can actually make a big impact. And we wanted to do something where we could, as we talked about just now, empower the customer, empower the licensee, empower the partner of ours to make a sustainable product that could make money, could save money, and could also make a positive impact at the same time. And then most importantly, something that could reach the gigaton scale. And that gigaton scale means 1 billion tons of CO2 removed or reduced or both. And that's really something. And that's actually why we ended up into concrete, because it's the second most used material on the planet behind water. You know, everyone uses water, but we also use a lot of concrete. So what better way than doing something that creates billions of tons of CO2, that could potentially remove billions of tons of CO2. So that's kind of where it came from. And, you know, we have a great team around us and a great team of scientists, a great team of, you know, marketing people. And we just all kind of gelled together on creating this technology and this specific solution.
Yeah, that's incredible. And with the paint, that's smog armor, right? Is that what you said? And how did that get started? How did you come up with the paint idea?
Yeah. I was making an exhaust tip for your car. Stay with me here. Okay. So again, it came from, you know, I lost those family members. And by losing those family members to someone else polluting their air, I wanted to solve air pollution. And really, you know, that's the basis for Carbon Limit 2. Like, I really wanted to find a way to solve air pollution, or at least to help save other people, help protect, heal, and improve the environment from these air pollutants, which we, you know, my first thing when I thought of, okay, how can I do something to save and create a solution to air pollution? I'm like, well, I know air pollution comes out of cars. You know, you can understand that. And there's a lot of cars on the road. So I thought smog armor was going to be this exhaust tip where you put it on the end of your muffler, and it had a filter inside, and that filter would actually capture a lot of the emissions that were coming out of your car. And I made it. And it actually worked really well. I was removing up to 90% of the pollutants that were coming out from your car. All different types. NOx, particulate matter, CO2. And CO2 was the big one. And it worked great, but I had to pivot that idea because I thought having everyone put this exhaust tip filter on your car and change the filter wasn't something that everyone wanted to do. And I also didn't want it to not last long enough where it started creating waste and, you know, it'd have to be thrown away or it'd have to be, you know, whatever. And then I just thought, what could I create that everyone does? And we all paint. A lot of us paint, not all of us, but most places get painted every year, every couple of years at least. And someone's painting and there's a lot of paint going on. How can I find a product that everyone could do that they're doing it right now? And that's kind of the same premise with Carbon Limit. You know, how can we integrate this into something that's already existing? And people paint. So let's put this little, you know, mineral into paint that captures these pollutants. Same thing is into the concrete. We put this material into the concrete that's doing all the good stuff with something that we're already using. So that was really where that came from.
That's so cool.
Thanks.
It is. It sounds like almost like science fiction, fairy tale kind of stuff. A paint that improves the air quality and filters, probably not filters, probably not the scientific word, but captures pollutants that are in the air. What is your exact background? I think, you know, it sounds like just improving the environment, improving, you know, the emissions, air quality, all that kind of stuff is such a passion of yours. Where did the scientific knowledge come from? Like, what's your background there, schooling wise and all that kind of stuff?
Sure. Yeah. So when I went to college, I did start heading down the route of material scientist and chemist, and I loved that. But what I saw, which is still relevant very much so today, is there's a huge divide between science and business and entrepreneurship. And even when you look on college campuses, they're usually like opposite ends of the campus. And when you go to school to become a scientist, and look, I'm generalizing here, and maybe someone might get mad because it's a little too general. But when you go to school to become a scientist, you're more or less with their curriculums looking to create IP, create new solutions, new technologies. And that comes with, you know, you're checking the checkbox for the university for creating new IP that came out of this school and then checking on a publication box. So they're kind of taught not how to commercialize that technology, but how to create technology and then how to publish publications on there. I decided to finish school as a business major. And my specific knowledge came from those publications that are created on the other side. So go to Google Scholar and there's something called googlescholar.com. And it's actually like a database of all of the different publications that you can find for different technologies that will never see the light of day. Like if you go there and you're like, hey, I want to find a technology that can do X, Y, and Z, and you look it up and there's probably a bunch of them and you'll never see them. Like they never come out of the lab, let's say, and then into the commercial market. So I just taught myself everything there is to know. And this is a pretty nuanced space too, you know, carbon capture technology and carbon capture utilization and storage, carbon capture and storage and mineral carbonization and direct air capture. These types of technologies are relatively new and there's some mechanisms that are older. So there's like such a gold mine of these technologies that are just coming out of infancy, have just been in the lab. And I already had my ideas on it and just expanding my knowledge. You know, I don't think it's 10,000 hours that create mastery. I think it's 10,000 iterations, right? So you iterate something 10,000 times, it's going to be amazing. If you do the same thing for 10,000 hours, it's going to be the same as it was on hour one. So it's, you know, coming up with those iterations and, you know, that's really the crux and that's the background of like what people don't see that I do and what we do is, you know, you're doing all these different iterations and they just see what we showed them and what comes out on the commercial market. So.
I love that 10,000 iterations that I'm going to write that down right now. because I recently saw something that said, you know, a lot of people say that they have say 20 years experience, but most people that have 20 years experience, it's 1 year experience 20 times over, which
exactly.
A lot of times can just mean, you know, you could get all that expertise in say 1 year, but 20 years over, you're just not that much more experienced, but you're so much more stuck in your ways. So,
and you're probably less experienced than the guy that just came out in med school, if it's a doctor, you know, that guy forgot stuff over 20 years or is doing things kind of lopsided. Yep. So yeah, I agree with you 100%. I feel the same way.
That is super cool. And for me, you know, I feel like we basically have the same path. I mean, I just learned how to build decks on YouTube. I didn't know that there's tools to learn way cooler and more important stuff online with Google Scholar. I wish I would have went to Google Scholar instead of YouTube to figure out, you know, what I was going to learn how to do with my life. But it's just another, I'd never heard of that Google Scholar. I know that there's different databases to do to get some of these publications and research, but there's like literally no excuse for anybody anywhere trying to do anything that like they don't have access. Like the internet is the great equalizer. You just said, you know, probably most of what you learned was through reading publications that anyone can access. And that's how I learned. I mean, something much simpler, just building backyards, but I learned it all on YouTube. And it's just, I think that's so cool to hear in your experience. You have kind of a similar way that you gained a lot of this knowledge. And I just think that's another win for the internet, the great equalizer. All that information's out there.
It is the great equalizer. I agree. And yeah, everyone has access to it. It's just about what your motivation is and what your unique ability is. Like everyone has a different unique ability. It's about finding that out and then mastering it and figuring out how to express it the right way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's so cool. Like, I just want to make it clear. I could never probably read even one publication just because I can't, my brain does not work that way, but it's nice to know I could have the access.
I will say, you know, when I first started that though, I would have two computers open because I would have to decipher certain things that were in there, because some of them, if you don't know it already or don't know certain things, they're like hieroglyphs. You're just like, I have no idea what I just read. But then the patterns emerge and then you kind of, it's, you know, it's like riding a bike. You figure out how to ride the bike and, you know, just different turns look a little different after a while, but that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's freaking awesome. And I recently, I think we were talking about this when we had dinner a couple months ago as well. I've read, and I've talked about on the podcast like probably 100 times, this book that I read, Super Tall, about super tall buildings. I've always been so fascinated about buildings like the Burj Khalifa and just these, like, I always look at it like we're just building backyards, and how could I ever get like an ego about like building these tiny little backyards when people are out there building skyscrapers, super tall buildings? It's always fascinated me. And that book has a huge, huge part of it dedicated to just how ubiquitous concrete is and the carbon footprint of it, which I never really thought about. You know, when you think about skyscrapers, a lot of times you think about steel or you think about the glass, and those are all huge parts of it. But a lot of these, the foundations, the core, all of that is concrete. And we're, you know, when you start to think about how much of it is produced, it's just absolutely mind blowing. And like you said, I can't believe it's the second most used material in the world behind water, which is just crazy. How do you see the global scale and the mass integration of this technology into something like concrete? Because concrete has the ability to kind of get it everywhere.
Yeah, and that's a really great question, and it's actually how we metamorphosized and pivoted our business model, because we ended up first, you know, we did a project with Google, we did a project with the Department of Transportation, you know, we did these cool projects, but we were actually making the capturecrete, which is our material, which is a powder additive for concrete. Similar to, you know, another fly ash or slag or another SEM, another cement replacement. And we provided it to them, and we realized, you know, two things. One, we hated doing it. And two, we weren't making it cheaper. We were making it more expensive because, you know, just, you know, economy of scales. So we decided to go another route and started licensing our technology. That way we would approach a very large project developer, like some of the giga projects that are going on in Saudi Arabia and other cement and concrete manufacturers or chemical admix companies. And we went to them and we're like, hey, look, we're going to license you this technology. they take our formula, they make carbon capturing concrete, sell it to the market, and then we generate carbon credits for every time they make this concrete, for every cubic yard, for every cubic meter, for whatever you want to call it, every ton of concrete that gets created. So that model allows us to actually scale globally really easily. And we're able to interface with a company that's around the world and say, hey, look, license this technology, source material A and material B from your backyard and in your region so you can keep the economic benefit there. And then we will help you generate carbon credits. You will convey carbon capturing concrete and sustainable concrete. And then we're able to really do business everywhere. And that's really what we're looking to do is, you know, we're starting licensing our technology here in the US. We're already working on some international licensees there and able to get it there really quickly. So for us, we really, you know, with the goal of removing 1 billion tons of CO2, we need some really great partners to do that, you know, whether they're the contractors or the developers or the owners or whoever can spec it in, or if it's the actual manufacturers that are working with us to create it for the marketplace or for the projects.
I think that's an entrepreneurial thing that a lot of our listeners can relate to and learn something from, is that pivot moment where you kind of had an idea of, we're going to, you know, we've developed this additive to the concrete. We're going to manufacture it. We are going to do all this, you know, manufacturing and then ship it. And, you know, especially with your business model and your business message, just shipping it, creating it right there, that's a carbon footprint in, you know, in its own right. But that idea of pivoting, I think that's so important for so many people, kind of treading that balance of, when is it time to persevere and like push through because it's not working yet? And when is it time to pivot away and do something else and change your business model a little bit? What was like that moment like for you when you were like, okay, we're going down this route. This isn't going to work. We need something different. What was that like conversation like with yourself?
Yeah, that was, you know, I think you're right on point here. And I think this also, it's all about your vision and what your big goal is. And when I looked at the vision of transforming essentially all the concrete, all the new concrete in the world into carbon capturing concrete, I couldn't do that with this inefficient way of producing the material, building a small facility, costing a couple of $1 million, taking a year, 2-3 years to build it, get a permit for it, and then start, you know, deploying it within a 300-mile radius and then doing that again. And like by the time I'd be 400, I might get overseas, you know. So it's like, it's looking at it from a perspective of what are those goals and then how can I achieve those goals? And if that process and that method and that way of doing it now don't line up with it, you have to make that pivot. And we were surprised because we went into this like licensing idea, like, first of all, could they just take the technology and run with it? And then, you know, how do we do it this way? And how do you set it up? And things aren't really done this way. So it's kind of rethinking it. And then it's finding a way that works. And luckily, you know, the industry is interested in this type of, you know, licensing model and this type of business model. So it's really, you know, taking that ultimate goal of yours, which, you know, you need to have a goal first so you know which way you're going. And then making sure you find all the right ways to get there. And I'm a true believer in just growing 10x. And if I want to double my business, you know, this year to next year, I just have to work twice as hard. But if I have to 10X my business this year to next year, I can't do it the same way. I have to think differently. And we have to think about it in a totally different way. There may be one solution to 10X your business versus hundreds of solutions to double the size of your business. You know, just add more people, call more people, make more, you know, meetings, whatever it is. And then, you know, going 10X, it's all right, well, you have to work with this company, and this company, and that's a way to get it done, and you hyper-focus there. So there's just a lot of thought process for me with, you know, how we're going to get there and what those solutions are. But do not be rigid in your approach, because I see it so much where companies are stuck. Okay, we've done it this way. We've committed. Let's just keep going. And it's like they're slowly crashing and burning, but they're like, well, let's keep crashing and burning because we're still doing it. And it's like, no, stop.
Do you find that, you know, you benefit from having somebody that kind of helps tread that balance? Because that's kind of the dynamic between me and Catherine on our team, is I'm somebody that wants to pivot. You know, I'll pivot. I'll come up with a new idea. I'm going to, you know, let's go this direction. And I'm really good at that. I'm really good at coming up with new ideas and wanting to go down that path and see what it's all about. And in the beginning of the business, that was amazing. It helped kind of explore some different ideas and get some clarity on where we should be going. But eventually you can't just keep pivoting because you'll just kind of pivot in a circle and you're not going to go anywhere. Gathering somebody that, you know, will kind of stick on the track. So between the two of us, it's like, okay, I see where you're going. I see you're getting excited about this idea, but, you know, let's lock in. This is the thing that we agreed that we were going to do. Let's continue to do it unless there's a really good reason that we say we're not going to do it. Not just because, hey, this other idea is pretty cool too. Let's go there. Do you rely on people around you to like keep you on track, keep you focused? Because it sounds like you're somebody that comes up with a ton of ideas and are very creative. And it's probably really difficult to not look that way and say, let me just check this out real quick.
I'm totally chomping at the bit right now because that's me. Like, I have a Catherine too. Her name is Christina and she's my COO. And that's why she's there. Because yes, like, look, you have to meet her. She's awesome. She's awesome. And she keeps it organized. She keeps the direction. And like, it's helped me also stay more hyper-focused too. Because yes, I'm that way. Like, my brain works and, you know, I have already 20 other technologies that I have patented and I'm ready to go and I'm wanting to get started. And it's like, no, do this because there's a means to an end here and because we have to get here and this will ultimately get us there. So, there's a few people on my team, specifically Christina, that I lean on and that helps that process because look, it's that, you know, yin and yang and it's, you know, it's the integrator, my integrator and that's how those things help and work. And really like, a great team is where the success comes from. Because one person, you know, if I was just to run the company, I'd want 1,000 different technologies, you know, simultaneously going out and it just wouldn't be, you know, feasible. That's super important to have a great team around you that can keep you grounded, that can also work with you, that can also share ideas and that, you know, everyone puts in and participates and adds value in what their unique ability is and what their pillar of the company is.
That leads nicely into the next question of, it seems like, you know, you've come up with all these, I don't know if you inventions and, you know, technologies with different companies. Would you view yourself as a serial entrepreneur and where do you see these, you know, these 20 other projects going? Are you ever going to bring them to light?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see a platform in the future where, you know, there's every potential aspect and facet of the business that can help develop these technologies in a really short period of time. So building a duplicatable process and a system for how do you create a technology and bring it to market in 6 to 12 months versus 5 to 10 years, which most companies take to bring technologies out. And that's kind of what we've been doing here with Carbon Limit is, you know, creating this method and model for bringing these technologies out to the market fast and efficiently, and then where can we continue to bring more efficiency here? And then again, the licensing protocol, our licensing way of doing business, allows us to not be bogged down with supply chain and logistics and other things that would also slow us down as a company. So, you know, that's why we're focused on being a technology company, but staying hyper-focused to our technology until it's at a critical mass point.
Is there any other technology that you see out there right now that you're excited about in this green space, building industry space?
I think there's a few early stage ones that I'm keeping my eye on, but on like what's commercially available and deployable today, there's a couple of okay solutions and good solutions for the marketplace, but I see as the technology continues to evolve, and we're able to get to that point of, you know, bringing in a sustainable technology doesn't create a green premium, but it creates actually a net positive cash return. That's when those, you know, next ones for me are going to be so important because, you know, as we talked about before, like there's got to be some incentive can't just be cost. And in some places, there's early adopters like your Googles and your other companies out there that really want to do good for the environment and will pay for it, but the majority won't yet. And we're seeing more and more people do so. But yeah, the technologies, I see like direct air capture being really interesting, but like a hybrid form of it. And direct air capture is like a big, you know, system that pulls air through it and scrubs the CO2 out of it. And then they can use it for other purposes, or they can inject it into a well, or, you know, mineralize it underground. Like, I think that's got merit, but it's just not efficient and effective yet. And there's a lot of great technologies that are just not efficient, effective, and cost affordable yet. So getting there is what I'm looking forward to. And I think there's going to be some really cool innovations that will get it there.
I think having that commercial viability, again, is so important, because without that, you really have like governments or something else to kind of have the emphasis on to pay for it or adopt it. And that never really, you know, ends up super well or reaching mass scale, when you can have something like a startup where it's investable and it doesn't have to be profitable right now to get the idea started, but you know, you can have some startup capital dumped into it, and you know, there's a pathway to profitability there. That's what's really gonna light the fire on it and pour gasoline on the idea and just blow it up to a mass scale. Because otherwise, it's a great idea to save the earth and all of this stuff, but you know, everybody thinks, well, that's, you know, that's somebody else's job. I don't want to go out of my way or sacrifice. I don't want to pay more taxes to, you know, to fund this idea. It has to be commercially viable. So I think that's really an exciting way to look at it, because it's encouraging to know that, you know, there are other people out there that are, you know, kind of going this route, because I think you'll be the first to admit this has to be a multifaceted strategy to reverse our carbon footprint, you know? Even 50
gigatons,
tons or whatever. It's, you know, it's going to have to be attacked from different angles. So I think it's hopefully this is a really good time where we see things kind of turn a little bit and you get some more adoption, because something that we say on the podcast a lot is it's not all about the cheddar, but it is partially about the cheddar. It's always got to be a little bit about who gets paid, and it's exciting that this can be turned into a real business model and have positive change.
Agreed. And I appreciate what you guys are doing with bringing awareness to this and, you know, integrating it into what you guys do on a day to day. It's really important, and it's certainly a collaborative effort, and it's got to be tackled from every direction, and all of us can play a role. And I think, you know, even just down to our conscious buying decisions, like we can all make an impact in one way or another. So everyone's able to participate here.
Yeah. Moving away from that a little bit, you are an entrepreneur that's crazy busy. We were just talking about all the places that you are traveling. Literally behind you, behind your office is a airport, an executive airport. Do you fly out of there private?
So I tell my team, once there's an electric jet, yes. But until then, we try not to, because there's a bigger carbon footprint. You know, Taylor Swift's getting all the guff because she uses it all the time, and it's way worse than a commercial airline when you split up the carbon footprint over, you know, a couple hundred people. So I'm holding off on that for now, but, you know, that's our view.
I did see a really funny meme that all those memes that were coming out, like when Taylor Swift needs to get something, and it was like, Taylor Swift when she needs to get something from the other side of her plane, and it was like her in a jet inside of her jet. That was really funny. But so you're super busy. You have a million things that are going on all the time. What does your daily routine look like? Are there any things that you like to try to stick to as far as daily routine to keep you focused, keep you energized, keep you motivated? Doesn't have to be an everyday thing, but are there certain things that you like to kind of have as part of your daily routine?
Waking up at 4 or 5 o'clock. and having like a power morning routine. Like I think too many people wake up and they gravitate right to their phone. They're looking at a text message, or looking at an email, looking if they missed a call, and they're looking at social media. Like right there, like you've given your energy and your attention to something else, that if it's a bad text or a bad email, or, you know, you're envious of someone else's, you know, Instagram or social media or whatever it is, like you already have, you know, an offset energy for the day. I wake up and I meditate. I do some work in a flow state where I'm not looking at my phone. I'm not looking at email. I'm not looking at messages. I do something that I can, I mean, honestly, like between 4 and 8 in the morning, I probably do more work than most people do in like 2 weeks, 2 full weeks, because I'm in such a flow state. I'm so undisturbed and I'm just so effective at that time. Then I go walk on the beach, and I'm here in South Florida. So, you know, the beach is warm here, so it's nice. And then after that, I'll go to the gym, and then I'll join these guys at the office. And then after that, I'm just, you know, already with so much accomplished throughout the day that I feel great. And by having that, like, I call it miracle morning routine, or my really cool morning routine, like, it just sets me off on such a good energy and such a good vibe for the day that I'm able to really do anything at that point.
So you've been working nonstop for about 13 hours at this point. It's almost 5 p.m.
Today I woke up at 2:30, so a little longer than that.
I'll tell you what, I started waking up. So me and Catherine both went on a really long kick of waking up 5 a.m. I just moved and I tried to work out at home for, this is a long story, I tried to work out at home for like years, and it never took. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to join a gym, but the only time I can go is super early. Otherwise I won't be able to go. So I've been waking up at 4:30, and it's amazing how quick you sort of get used to that. Yep. And you're just like awake. And then you kind of think like, if I wasn't doing this, I would just be like still asleep for another like 3 hours almost. Like this is kind of crazy. This is a huge, huge waste of time. And it's kind of offset. Like now I go to bed a lot earlier, but it's like all that's taking away is like 3 more hours of scrolling on my phone and watching Netflix. Like there's no productive moment that is taken away from me by going to bed so much earlier. But you are like so much more focused and energized for the day when you get up and you have like a small win like that, like just getting up and not snoozing or going to the gym or getting into a flow state. And and if something feels nice about like doing those things when you know a lot of the rest of the world is still sleeping.
Yeah. Like by the time I finish all that work, like I think about people just waking up and I'm like, I got like 2 weeks on them right now, or at least a solid day ahead of them before they woke up and even, you know, had their first cup of coffee. So, and I read a lot. I probably read 2 books a week. And that's really helpful too. Like I really love reading.
We do a book club on this podcast where we do a book a week. Do you have any recommendations?
A lot. it honestly really depends. You know, a real generalized one that I recommend is Buddha and the Badass by Vision Lakhiani. And Vision Lakhiani is the founder of Mind Valley. And this is a book that I think is really, you know, very universal. A lot of the other books that I read may be more applicable to me and my, you know, trajectory and my development and what I'm looking to do. And I don't read like novels. I read, you know, development books and other leadership books and other books that would be relevant to what I'm working on. But that's a really cool one that I, you know, used to give out as a company Bible to everyone that started, just because it was really cool. And it's really applicable, I think, no matter who you are or where you are in life.
So are you, we do a lot of audiobooks just cause we're both in the car a lot and it helps us kind of, you know, get through books during the week. Are you doing all paper copies?
Both. I do more audio because instead of listening to radio, I listen to books. When I'm at the gym, people think I'm listening to music. I'm listening to books. And then, and then I read when I get home at night. So I do both.
Nothing gets me jacked up in the gym like some good nonfiction.
I mean, I'm telling you, like, That's my thing too.
That's awesome, and that's really something that me and Catherine kind of I don't want to say we started reading together because we both knew how to read independently before we started working together. You know, kind of tackled some books together, and I started listening to audiobooks, and it's amazing how much you can accomplish and learn if you just replace radio. I basically replaced sports radio, which is basically the same 5 minutes of radio for on repeat for an entire year. Just they should score more points, and they should let the other team not score so many points. And replace that with audiobooks. It's amazing. You can easily plow through one book a week and learn so much, and it's not that much of a sacrifice if you pick books that you're interested in and are entertaining, and you're so far ahead. So it's I love picking up these little things that aren't a huge sacrifice but can make such a huge impact. So I think that's super cool. What about a business book? Do you have any business books that you love?
So Buddha and the Badass kind of ellipses that. Other business books, Good to Great is a good one. Masters of Scale is a good one. It just really depends kind of what you're looking for. But there's I could look at my catalog and run through and 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel is a good one too. Like there's some really great books. Delivering Happiness, the Tony Hsieh book, Zappos. That's a really cool one. Talks about company culture, talks about his story, talks about, how they did it. Like that's a cool one too. Like I like, real applicable, stories from businesses that, go from nothing to something massive and go from a brand new idea that's changing the industry that's never been done. So that kind of stuff I really like.
Yeah. 0 to 1. I listened to not too long ago. That one was really good. And Good to Great is, I read the paper copy back when I was reading paper books.
Yeah,
and
that's a classic.
Really great one as well.
It's a classic.
I guess anything else that you want to touch on? We're super appreciative for your time. Today, any message or anything like plans for the future? What's the world going to look like in 20 years? Once Carbon Limit has 20 more years under its wings.
I hope that most of the concrete in the world is carbon capturing concrete at that point. But really, like, we look to do it to make an impact, but we also look to do it to help inspire others to do it. Like before, what we would have done may have been a charity, something that was driven by a donor that was kind of guiding the rails on which direction we go. Now, something that's society plus, that's good for the environment, is also effectively a very lucrative business. And we want to show other people out there that, look, doing something that's good for the environment, that's good for society, has a good return, and it fulfills you, and you can be successful, and you can, have financial wealth as a result. So we want to just create that and expose that to those out there thinking, there's only one way to make money, and it's to, do something bad, and show them, look, do this great stuff and be fulfilled, be successful, and be financially, wealthy as a result.
Yeah. Hopefully this kind of paves the way for those type of businesses. Like, I think 30 years ago, something like Tom's Shoes or Bombas socks, like those things would have been kind of foreign concepts where you sell one, you give one away, one for one type of businesses. But those type of companies have proven that it can not only have huge society impact for good, but it can be really great for business because it gives the everyday person a way to buy into an idea. The idea that we should help other people, or the idea that we should save the world and reduce our carbon footprint. I think by integrating it into a business, it gives everybody a way to, like money is democracy, where people can spend their money. It gives them a say, and it gives them something, a bigger idea to buy into. So I think it's really cool that, we can be just the tiniest little part of this with the premier line of stone. with the carbon limit technology in it. I think it's so cool. I'm so happy that, you know, NCP and you met, and I got to, you know, Premier got to be a tiny part of this story. But I think you've given me hope for the future, and you know, that we're not going to just run the world into the ground. It's going to be a really, a phoenix from the ashes, mm-hmm. not actual ashes, before the ashes. We're going to
before the ashes,
give people a way to make a change. So, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Sounds great. Really great to be here with you guys.
Cool. Catherine, you got anything else?
No, I appreciate your time and chatting with us. This is all really good stuff.
Yeah. And when you're like literally, you know, world famous and like winning a Nobel Prize or something, I'll be like, yeah. Believe it or not, he was on the Hardworking Happy Hour. He was on the podcast. He's an alumnus. So we appreciate it so much. And hopefully we'll see you soon. Everybody can check you out, Carbon Limit. Doing some really cool stuff, and a really great way to support the mission is to buy the new Premier Stone from Adorn and yes. get that out in the world, sucking up that carbon. So yes. Appreciate it, Tim, and we'll hopefully talk to you soon. But we really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us and the audience, and yeah.
Thanks. Great to be here, guys.
Cool. All right. Well, till next time. This has been the Hardworking Happy Hour.
See you next week.